right. Each week I'm joined by our regular correspondent from the land of the free and the home of the brave, our big brother nation, the United States of America. This week, regardless of what you think of him, Donald Trump's administration, it's been slow going in filling quite a number of very important roles. That's a simple fact. That's numbers. Now, this is combined with the man's somewhat unpredictable nature, which I guess could be a little bit more subjective. Some people have been concerned with just how the Trump administration might handle their first real crisis. Professor Ed Blakely, he's been in the States last week, and he joins me now to discuss. Ed, good morning.
Good morning.
Absolute pleasure to have you here this morning, mate. Now, looking at a few of the stories from this week, North Korea is obviously a big one. They've, according to reports, developed a weapon delivery missile system capable of theoretically reaching some of the distant shores of the United States. What do you make of Trump's reaction so far?
Well, he's very tough this morning in Poland, where he said the Russians basically have to start playing ball, and if they don't, there'll be something to pay. He didn't say what, but he said quite clearly a line's being drawn in the sand here. He came off that a little later in the day saying there's a possibility of cooperation, but he's getting tougher. And I think the reason he's getting tougher is military options. That is, the discussions in the east side of the White House have begun as to how they're going to take out North Korea, with or without the Chinese and the Russians. So he has to be tough with the Russians, somewhat tough with the Chinese, not too tough with the Chinese, but he has to get all of Europe and all of Asia on side. That's what he's being told. And I think, believe it or not, he's acting like a president and mouthing the words that come from the National Security Council.
Look, as I mentioned before, there are a number of roles still empty in the Trump administration, sort of 6 months in. How does this affect their ability to respond to the kind of crisis North Korea represents?
Well, it affects the organization very much, because the kind of boots on the ground, that is, when you don't have ambassadors like Japan, there's no one there to represent the United States when their National Security Council sits down and says what their options are. And you can't just send someone in who was an ex-foreign service officer. They really don't know what relationship that person has with the president or the secretary of state. So it is a very difficult circumstance, and he's made it so. His idea is he's the corporate president, and everything comes to him for determination. But you can't do that when you have a far-flung enterprise and allies that need to become be informed and be going along with you every step, and you have to have eyes and ears on the ground to report back how they're reacting to your mission. He needs ambassadors in place. There's no ambassador in Australia. This is delicate and difficult.
You know, I just want to talk a little bit on the military options you mentioned there for a moment. Trump's own Secretary of Defense, retired Marine General James Mad Dog Mattis, he's probably one of the most highly respected members of the Trump administration. A lot of respect. A lot of people have a lot of respect for this guy. Now, he said an escalation with North Korea would lead to fighting, the kind of fighting most people haven't seen in this lifetime. More brutal fighting than anybody's seen in this lifetime since World War II, essentially. Could Trump's war of words really go there with Kim Jong-un, with military action, bombing, boots on the ground?
Yes. I think those options are being discussed now. Now, the obvious option is to take out all of their military and communications capability. Those sites have been located. They have been charted. The bomb ranges, the amount of ordnance that's required is already in place. The carrier ships are offshore. S-1s, which are the military aircraft that can fly under the radar, are stationed in Korea. It would take about 4 minutes to make this option happen. And the boots on the ground are stationed at the 38th parallel, where nearly 100,000 ROK, Republic of Korea, troops are ready to roll. All the military equipment and tactical nuclear weapons. Pyongyang will be a ghost town for sure.
Well, scary thoughts. I mean, America is obviously militarily superior to North Korea, but at the same time, this would look like a very sort of bloody and drawn-out conflict. Let's move on from that one for a moment to talk about the other big news story of the week, the G20. It's on the agenda for the United States and indeed for Australia as well, along with Donald Trump. Now, the United States, they're usually one of the leading global voices, of course, and yet what do we see happening now that Donald Trump is attending his first G20?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, obviously, this is in Hamburg, and so the Chancellor of Germany will be the leader of this meeting, and she's made it very clear that she wants to be the leader of the other side of the table, and that means all the Europeans versus the United States. Trump laid down the gauntlet in two ways. First, he disrespected her when she came to visit him, and second, he disrespected Macron and the other leaders when he first came to Europe. So Trump and the United States are outside the fence, and they need these nations now with North Korea. So all of a sudden, Trump has changed his tune, saying, "We allies," using the "we" word, not "you." You're going to have to pay up and stuff like this. He knows now he needs them. One of the good things about all this is it may restore the balance. It may mean that the Europeans come together as a group and get their economies going and stop fighting one another. Now, Britain's on the outside of the fence on that one, but I think Britain will work its way back in. I think they got the real scare.
Now, Trump is also going to be meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin and has been preparing, according to reports, by reading tweet-sized bulletins on the topics that they should cover. Now, the White House, they've said there's no official agenda for the meeting. We've seen how well Trump improvises before, and Putin, he's a lot of things, but he's a very canny operator. He's a very tough political operator. How concerning do you find this meeting?
Well, I find it very concerning. When you're dealing with an adversary, and let's consider the Russians adversaries, they have had years to prepare Putin for a meeting just like this. He is a skilled operative. He has one of the best intelligence operations in the world. So we send Trump in, who doesn't read his intelligence briefings. Maybe they are giving him short messages, but it's a long message. That's important. Having prepared some of these intelligence briefings, you go back, you know, maybe even to Napoleon, to prepare the president for a meeting like this and make sure he understands every move and counter move. It is a chess game, an intellectual chess game. The only person you have in the room with you is your interpreter. There is no one else. And I can see what will happen in a situation like that. Putin will play cat and mouse with them, and then pounce when he sees an open space. Where that open space be? It'll be Syria. And this is what I think will come out of that. That he'll get the king, is he the king of Syria, kept in place for a settlement. Mm. That will be the deal. And the Russians will keep their harbor open for the next 99 years. He'll keep playing around until he gets to that point. They'll reach an accord because the Russian army and military are tired of Syria. They've lost men, they've lost equipment for something they can't figure out. And they are ready to settle, but they want to settle on their terms. So Assad will be kept in the peace negotiations. When the peace negotiations end and a coalition government comes up, Assad will have to fend for himself. The biggest news this week were the bombings in the capital. Syrians can no longer defend Damascus. It is over. So that's what's on the table. I think the Russians are sensible about North Korea. I don't know about the Chinese.
Now, just finally, you did mention that speech from Trump in Poland. You know, tough talk on the Russians to a certain extent. He was saying, I believe President Obama should have been tougher on the Russians for being involved supposedly with election hacking. And yet at the same time, when I use that word supposedly, Trump very much did say, well, there are other options on the table. In spite of what my intelligence agencies have been telling me, there are other countries that could have been involved. Is there any other takeaways you have from Trump's little Trump's adventures in Poland, as it were?
No, but going back to what you just said, why blame your predecessor? It just doesn't wash. Could Obama blame Bush for the collapse of the economy? No, he had to fix it. And furthermore, here's a guy who, 2 months ago, was shaking the Russian foreign minister's hand and telling them how he had everything in hand and he's getting rid of Comey, etc. He is just not credible. And the Russians know it. The Russians have something on him. And that's the reason he's afraid of what might come out with conversations that somebody in his organization had trying to either seal that or get it. And I suspect there's some tapes, there's some photos, there's something that is super embarrassing. And if it all comes out, the house falls down. That's what he's afraid of. So when you have something personal on the president of the United States or a diplomat or anything like that, that is a whole card that just cannot be played. If it is played, it's a disaster. So Trump is scared to death, and he's trying now to do what his people tell him and play president. Let's see how long that lasts.
Ed, absolute pleasure as always. Thank you very much for your time this week, Matt.
Thank you. See you next week.